Do you have an issues, etc. story to tell? We want to hear from you. Tell us your issues, etc. story by calling our comment line before Thursday, April 7th, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Now, the listener with the best story will receive the first three Issues, Etc. books of the month for this year. 618-223-8384. 618-223-8384.
So often those contemporary issues are used to polarize. We see them as calling us together to convene. Our unity is within our diversity.
That's just nonsense. Of course, if you have diversity on key core Christian teachings and doctrines, you've got big-time problems.
Paul, fitness for Jesus. I do feel a spiritual connection whenever you have the music on and it's singing about lifting you up and being closer to God. You do feel that.
Pop American Christianity, in an ill-fated attempt to get the gospel out, has really asked the world what it wants.
Washington jet drivers love Issues, Etc.
They are remarkable to look at. I've seen some very beautiful photos of these little books. They're called technically codices, and that just means books. There they are. They appear to have some kind of raised symbols and writing on them. And they've been around, some say they've have been discovered 100 years, some say only 5 years ago, from Jordan, allegedly, and some archaeologists are already tentatively concluding that they may have a connection to earliest Christianity. You've probably seen the story in the news. We'll be talking about this alleged discovery of some 70 lead books. They're lead leaves bound together with wire from the first century. Dr. Paul Meyer, professor of ancient history at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, Michigan, will be our guest for the first half hour or so. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon. It's the 31st of March. After our conversation with Dr. Meyer, Colleen Carol Campbell will join us. We'll get her thoughts on the sexualization of girls. Then Brian Brown of the National Organization for Marriage will join us. Apparently, President Barack Obama's nominee for Solicitor General was grilled on the question of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and it's causing a little bit of a flap. We'll see what Brian Brown thinks about that later in this hour. You can join us for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or visit our Facebook fan page and leave a question or comment for Dr. Meyer on those ancient books, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Paul Meyer is professor of ancient history at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. He's author of numerous books, including In the Fullness of Time, an historian looks at Christmas, Easter, and the early church. Dr. Meyer, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hello, Todd.
What would make an archaeologist conclude that books this ancient might have a connection, just without even looking at the content, so to speak, that books this ancient might have a connection to earliest Christianity?
Well, because these lead leaves also have one of the illustrations has a cross in front of what looks like an open tomb in front of the walls of Jerusalem, clearly. And so the cross with the open tomb kind of suggests Christianity, and supposedly there are some Christian slogans also which have not yet been translated. And I wonder if these things are 5 years old already, why there hasn't been more translation. And there are all kinds of mysteries about the discovery. You mentioned one of them. You know, on one, the Bedouin shepherd claims it's been in his family for 100 years, and another says, no, they were discovered just 5 years ago. So we have a bunch of questions here that are not yet answered, and so it makes it very difficult at this point, you know, to evaluate these things. If true, of course, yes, all the sensational talk would be appropriate. If they're authentic, because this is a kind of a very shady spot, dark spot, I should say, in church history as to what happened between the time of Jesus' death and resurrection and the destruction of Jerusalem and up to the time of the first century. All we know for sure is Eusebius telling us, he's the earliest church historian, that the Christians fled to Pella, which is indeed in the Transjordan area. And these lead plates were discovered east of there. I don't know how far east yet, but it is indeed the place where the Christians took refuge when the war clouds were gathering in terms of the terrible destruction of the city of Jerusalem, the burning of the temple that happened in 70 A.D., the very thing that Jesus was predicting. So it's the right place for something like this to happen.
It must be frustrating for you as an ancient historian to see something like this and then say, but will we ever be able to establish once and for all the pedigree of these artifacts? We may be able to say they're ancient.
The reason for that, Todd, is because there have been so darn many frauds showing up. And, you know, what could be easier? We're not sure that the tomb of James, the half-brother of Jesus, is authentic anymore. For a while, everybody's excited about it because of the Aramaic inscription. And then we have the Jehoash inscription, which was also definitely proven a hoax. And so, you know, we've been here before. The engines run faster. Christians get fascinated by it, of course. And then later on to find it's a fraud. So I have to remember, I want to keep an open mind, because they said the same thing about the Dead Sea Scrolls. And when they were first discovered, Professor Driver at Oxford said they have to be frauds, you know, because they're too good to be true and so on. Well, it turns out they were authentic. So who knows? And if these are authentic, and if they finally all get translated, 70 tiny little books, it's really amazing, isn't it?
In archaeological terms, what would need to be done to establish or to disprove the authenticity of these little books?
Well, there'd be two avenues that you'd have to run down. First of all, there would be the transmission. We'd have to have absolute full assurance about what happened, when these things were discovered, how come there's discrepancy between 100 years and 5 years. The five-year version has it that there was a flash flood that exposed a menorah symbol, and that led them to dig further. Now, that one I like, if it's true. When you have an accidental discovery, that's great. I mean, this breathes authenticity then. If you have a salted discovery, that is one that's faked, usually there is ways by which the perpetrator will guide you in to find it. And so I do like the accidental nature of the discovery, if indeed that's what happened. So one trail is we've got to find what in the world happened in terms of this manuscript, these lead plates, what's the history of them and so on. Then you've got the laboratory evidence to determine if the corrosion is forced on those lead plates or if it's real. Then you got the textual comparison that has to be made. All 70 would have to be open, checked out, and then, indeed, the script compared with known script at that time and place. And then when you get the results of all that, and then you get the nature of the translation, then finally a decision can be at least made on a preliminary basis as to whether these are fakes or whether they're real.
The first question I had when I saw the pictures was, do we have any artifacts that have been determined to be authentic from this time that are similar to this? I mean, we know of codices that are of more perishable material. But,
indeed.
But do we know of any artifacts where we have codices like this, metal leaves bound in wire in the way that these are?
Yeah, I have to admit, the first time I saw the binding, you know, with the holes on one side and so on, that looks like your thriving pastor's desk diary. You know, it seemed to be much too modern and for authenticity. But the fact of the matter is, in the first century, when they're getting sick and tired of rolling scrolls, the Codex was born. This is a case of taking page after page and binding them together somehow. And indeed, one of the ways they did do it was to drill holes on one side of a wooden block and cover it with another wooden block on the other side. In fact, that's what the Codex means. It means tree trunk. And then, of course, they're going to streamline this later on. But as ugly as these pictures look and as fake as they look, you know, on the Internet, no, that they could be real. I hadn't heard of wire being used before to bind them together. Usually it's a thong of leather of some kind, but that's not improbable. And lead plates have been known to be used, yes, indeed. Usually they were coated with wax, and it was the writing on it was then through the wax. In fact, the ancient passports were called diptychs, and they would often have two wax pages like that with an impression from some official on it. That's probably what St. Paul had with him when he was in Jerusalem and could show that to the tribune of the Jerusalem cohort when he tried to whip him. So these things are not unknown. I will say the miniature size of these things kind of surprises me. They say they're not much bigger than a credit card, for goodness sake. But again, that's not unheard of. We do have all these tiny little things discovered in amulets, to recall, in Hebrew from some of the other archaeology that's taking place over there. So it's not, put it this way, at this point from the evidence, it's not impossible that they're genuine.
So there's nothing in your mind looking at it as you have from a distance, all of us are looking at these things from a distance, that would be a major red flag saying, ah, come on.
No, I've seen nothing so far except for this dispute as to when they were discovered. I mean, it's pretty hokey if the family says that we had them for 100 years and then somebody else says it 5 years.
Dr. Paul Meyer is our guest. He'll be with us for a little bit on the other side of this break on this Thursday afternoon, March the 31st. We're talking about the discovery of some 70 lead books, allegedly from the first century, and some are already tentatively concluding that they may have a connection to earliest Christianity. First, they're books, and Christians are known for having some major contributions in terms of the development of the book form. And from what we can see of them, they appear to have some Christian symbolism on them as well. We'll see what Dr. Paul Meyer has to say about more about that on the other side of the break. He's professor of ancient history at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, and he is author of numerous books, including In the Fullness of Time, A Historian Looks at Christmas, Easter, and the Early Church. You can purchase In the Fullness of Time at our website, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page, issuesetc.org. Click Listen On Demand. More with Dr. Paul Meyer on the other side of the break. Then Colleen Carol Campbell will join us. We'll talk about the sexualization of girls.
Cardinal baseball is in full swing. The St. Clair County Transit District and the Redbird Express provide service to all Cardinal home games. Buses leave from St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights, Illinois, near the water tower. The first bus leaves 2.5 hours before game time, with service every 10 minutes. The last bus leaves 40 minutes prior to the game. The last bus will return from the stadium 25 minutes after the official end of the game. Round-trip fares are $5 for adults, $2 for children ages 5 to 12, and children under 5 ride free. All buses are wheelchair lift equipped and load and unload at the corner of 7th and Clark, right outside of Gate 4 at Busch Stadium. So give yourself a break from traffic and parking hassles and take a ride on the Redbird Express to the next Cardinals home game. Call 618-628-8090 or log on to scctd.org.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The beautiful shoreline, the calming sound of Lake Michigan, the glorious sunrise, the warm June afternoons. This is Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, June 11th through the 14th, 2011. The program? Dr. Paul L. Meyer, professor of history at Western Michigan University and frequent guest on Issues, Etc. Hit the topic? The Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity. Dr. Meyer will cover the historical background of Muhammad, the rise of Islam around the world, the beliefs and practices of this world religion, and what its future may hold. In addition, the 4-day, 3-night Luther Hostel includes interesting day trips to area attractions. For details how you can register for Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel, sponsored by the Concordia Bible Institute on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, visit the Concordia Bible Institute website at www.concordiabible.org or phone 262-243-4343.
Welcome back. A few more minutes with Dr. Paul Meyer talking about the discovery of some 70 lead books allegedly from the first century, allegedly making some connection with earliest Christianity. It's Thursday afternoon, March the 31st. Dr. Meyer, this question comes from Art. He says, who was still writing in Hebrew at that time? Are there any extant examples of written Hebrew outside the Dead Sea Scrolls? Anything from the Pharisees and teachers of the law like Hillel or Shammai from 1000 BC to 70 AD? The Septuagint, he says, was generated about 200 BC, I think, but very few read or wrote Hebrew. Would this fact cast doubt on the authenticity of the find?
Well, first of all, we're not sure that Hebrew is what is on these tablets. They haven't identified the language, and I'm kind of guessing it would be Greek. And until we know exactly what the language is, I guess I really can't comment on that except to say that you're always going to have Hebrew available to any of the rabbis through the centuries. They kept that alive because that's the sacred language of God as far as they're concerned. And therefore, they would continually be using Hebrew even, well, to the present day yet, as far as that's concerned. By the way, I forgot to tell you, Todd, this is unbelievable, but my latest novel in the Skeleton Trilogy, the third one is going to be called The Constantine Codex, believe it or not.
Interesting.
And it begins where? East Jordan, exactly. Yeah, it begins there where the heroine discovers an ancient manuscript. And so I couldn't believe it when yesterday this news came through. I said, oh, come on. Is fact following art here? And so I'm very fascinated, of course, by this discovery for that reason also. Fortunately, my plot wasn't co-opted by reality, but it did come close.
Well, maybe you can coordinate the publishing of your next novel with some real hard news on this and get a little promotion there. Thereby.
That's right. Maybe so.
What I'm wondering is, from what we can see here, we have symbols. You said, and the one that's made the most news is apparently a map or drawing of Jerusalem that seems to show a cross and an empty tomb. How plausible is it in your mind that the earliest Christians were already employing cross and empty tomb imagery?
There's no question that probably the earliest sign for Christianity was not the fish, as you often hear, but it was a cross. We can prove that by the fact that at Herculaneum in Italy, you know, which was devastated by Mount Vesuvius in the great eruption of 79 AD, well within the first century, on the second floor of a Christian house, evidently, there was an oratory there, and in the wall is the outline of a Christian cross, the kind we have seen in our churches all the time, that was plucked out of its matrix. In other words, the impression is left, and the family fled with this metal cross to avoid the lava that was destroying the city. So we know the cross was there almost from the start.
Talk about the circumstances, if what people are theorizing about these artifacts is correct, the circumstances in which it found its way from perhaps Christian Jerusalem to present-day Jordan to a cave. What would have likely been the historical consequences there?
Well, we know very, very clearly from the writings of the earliest Christian church historian, the father of church history, as a matter of fact, Eusebius, who tells us that James the Just of Jerusalem, Jesus' half-brother, was stoned to death for his Christianity 29 years after the Good Friday event. And it's a very fascinating parallel that we get from Josephus, for example. In fact, that's where Eusebius gets it, is from my favorite, you know, non-biblical source, Josephus. And he tells us the detail. Here's the first Christian bishop at Jerusalem, who is then stoned to death by the Sanhedrin in the absence of the Roman governor, who didn't get there yet. And that martyrdom of James, I think, is what inflamed the Christian community to get out of there. Because the war with Rome is going to start in 66 A.D., stoning of James is 4 years earlier. And Eusebius tells us that the early Christians in Jerusalem then fled, warned by an oracle, whatever that means. But it's after the stoning of James, and between 62 and 66 then, that they fled Jerusalem. Where did they go? Primarily to Pella, not Pella, Iowa, but same spelling. Which was a town east of the Jordan River, about 15 miles south of the Sea of Galilee. And there, the Christian community in exile lived. And that's why I pitched that as the site where they discovered this manuscript, which is quite near where they discovered these 70 lead-paged booklets.
And we should say that as precious as these are as artifacts, should they prove to be authentic, they would have been considered precious, maybe family relics or something, of earliest Christians, wouldn't they?
Well, clearly they were. That's the reason some of them are sealed. And they realized the permanence of lead, they thought, at that point. And for the very reasons that they hid the Dead Sea Scrolls in the jars above Jericho there, or near Jericho, is probably the same reason that led the Christians to provide some kind of a permanent record. Now, if this, again, turns out to be authentic, and if we get actual data of what happened in the later first century, I mean, this is it's phenomenal if it's true. I mean, it would be a fantastic gift to the church, no question about that. That's why I can understand the raving. The only thing, I'm not trying to be a skeptic here, but I'm trying to say let's not rave too loudly lest this prove a hoax.
Well, then with only a minute, Dr. Meyer, back to the cross and the empty tomb, if this were to prove to be authentic and an actual depiction of cross and empty tomb as Christian symbolism, would it give lie to the contention of so many liberal Bible scholars that this whole notion of death and resurrection was cooked up later, this whole Jesus is the Son of God was cooked up later by Christians centuries after the events were alleged to have occurred?
Well, that's a fake, terrible argument simply because within 19 or 20 years of the resurrection, we have St. Paul of Tarsus writing about that in 1 Corinthians. So, I mean, the claim that it took shape centuries later just does not work. And there are so many bad claims coming on nowadays. Todd, you heard about the latest one from Bart Ehrman?
No, what was it?
Oh, it's a book called Forged, in which he claims that three-quarters of the New Testament documents were forged. They're not authentic. I mean, this braying ass, I hate to say it, but, I mean, he just continually is one thing after another, loves to rattle Christian cages. So watch out for that book. It's another book of lies.
We might have you back to respond to it. Dr. Paul Meyer will be speaking on June the 11th through the 14th at the Luther Hostel at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Dr. Meyer's topic will be the Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity. For more information about the Luther Hostel, go to concordiabible.org, concordiabible.org, or call 262-243-4343. That's 262-243-4343. That's the Luther Hostel, June the 11th through the 14th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Dr. Paul Meyer on the Crescent and the Cross. Dr. Meyer, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. Blessings.
By the way, you can read an excellent article written by Dr. Meyer under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org called Archaeology, Biblical Ally or Adversary, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand.